Okay, we've talked about our young gun, Ramon Simmons, and now we'll get on to the two game changers of the podcast. We'll start off with a name who's been around the circuit in terms of we've been talked about for the last couple of years, Azari Josephs. When did he come onto your radar?
So, Azari's that classic kind of sports athlete, sports star, whatever you want to say, who has actually been around the game for a long time, but is still young. I think Azari, what, is 25, 26 now?
Yeah.
But he actually broke into the West Indies, very similar to Jaden Seals is probably what Azari Joseph was.
Okay.
So Azari Joseph, 2016, comes out of the Under-19 World Cup and seen as the next, like, great hope for West Indies bowling. Bold, hostile pace in that under 2016 Under-19 World Cup, which we won against all the odds. And literally came out of that World Cup and went straight into West Indies team. That's how good he was. And as tends to happen with young cricketers, he actually started exceptionally strong, probably because I don't think a lot of people had data on him. I don't think they knew a lot about him. And I think his first series, I could be wrong, but I believe his first series may well have been England, actually, when he broke into the West Indies team. And like I say, there was kind of a lot of hype about him, and probably too much pressure was put on his shoulders, really and truly, because the inevitable...
A lot of expectation in terms of it's hard being touted and maybe as the next Jason Holder or the next like Roach, in terms of you've got to live up to that hype and understand yourself as a young man in a West Indies team that still boasted a lot of kind of West Indies greats at the time.
And the thing is for Azari is that I think I'd love to, in fact, I need to interview Azari sometime soon and look back at that period of time. Because when I look back at Azari then to Azari now, I think what Azari had initially was pace, but not, sounds harsh, but not a whole lot else. But accurate pace, but just pace is what I mean. I wasn't seeing any variations. I wasn't seeing a kind of methodical thought process of how I'm going to go about getting this particular person out. It was more so, and this is my opinion,
I'm going to knock his head off.
Yeah, it was more so, this is what I know, so I'm going to bowl what I know, right? And he had initial success with that. But then, like I say, as with young cricketers, the dip then came. And in fairness to Azari, the dip, particularly in red ball cricket, it has taken him a long time to find his true self in the red ball version of the game.
Yeah.
When his dip came in red ball, perversely, his white ball cricket went up, particularly in ODI cricket. Azari Joseph has been West Indies' best ODI bowler for probably now the last 2 years, maybe 2.5 years. And when I say the best, I mean he's actually probably considered to be one of the world's best as in top five, but certainly when you look at rankings, he's up there. He's consistent.
Yeah.
He takes a lot of wickets in the 50-over version of the game. And the reason why that's important is because we are terrible in the 50-over version.
It's a point that you make extensively on your recent podcast. It's a hard time for West Indies.
It really is. It seriously is. So we have been dreadful in that version. In fact, I'm not even sure if I remember. I couldn't tell you the last time I thought we were good at that version of the game. So we have been dreadful for a long time. Scraped into that 2019 World Cup and then were dreadful. And we've been dreadful ever since, to the point where if we don't make it to the 2023 World Cup, I wouldn't be surprised, right?
Incredible to say that. Imagine saying that 5 years ago that West Indies wouldn't make a 50-over World Cup.
Yeah, but it's a reality.
You got to accept that reality in terms of your recent series against Ireland. Ireland beating you in the West Indies in terms of... So Azari Josephs is that shining light in that red ball, in that white ball 50-over team.
Yeah, 100%.
When it comes down to his T20 numbers, what kind of role does he play for, firstly, West Indies, and then secondly, for the franchises that he has played for?
Right, so, and this is where, Andrew, this is the most bizarre part of the Azari Joseph story. It has taken till 2022 for Alzarri Joseph to break into the West Indies T20 side. And no one quite understands how that came to pass.
Okay. So wait, it's taken till 2022 for him to make his I-20 debut?
He made his debut last year.
Okay.
And if, do you know what? If anything sums up West Indies cricket, that might sum it up.
Yeah.
How on earth do you have a bowler who is seen internationally as one of the standout ODI bowlers around the world, and he doesn't get into the West Indies T20 side? Last year was his first ever game for the West Indies T20 side. And within 6 months, when did he make his debut? It was at home versus, can't remember. I want to say Bangladesh or something, but it might be a bit earlier. And yeah. Since he made his debut, he's now undroppable. But and the thing is, I can see your quizzical look because you're probably thinking, well, of course he's undroppable.
if he's dominating ODI cricket, surely there isn't too much of a gap for a coach or for an administrator to think, okay, how can this young fast bowler who has a lot of key attributes dominate our T20 cricket?
Yeah. And I'm trying to, as we're talking, I'm trying to work out how to explain to you why he's only just started playing, but I don't even know if I know how to explain that. Because the obvious answer would be to say, oh, maybe there was no T20 data to go off, but this is the guy who I think it was his spell in IPL where I think he took 6-4.
Yeah, so he broke
a ridiculous spell in IPL. Was it 6-something, or am I making it up in my head?
Yeah, so Mumbai Indians in 2019, he came in as an injury replacement and he broke onto the scene and took figures of 6-12, still the best IPL figures. An incredible start for the Mumbai Indians. But I was looking down at his kind of his IPL journey since then, and there hasn't been a lot to talk about. He hasn't really played in between 2019 to then being picked up by he moved to the Gujarat Titans for 2.4 crore, and they won last year in terms of the newly formed Gujarat Titans. He was a crucial part in that, and he's been retained in the mini auction in 2023. So it's interesting that you say that he had that. But even though, in terms of IPL franchise cricket, is arguably at sometimes way better standard than mid-range IT20s that we see.
Yeah.
Even on that level, when you think he's struggling to get an IPL gig, you still think that there is a place for him, even in the squad for the West Indies at IT20.
And this is where I think things went wrong.
Mm.
First things first. A disclaimer should be that he did have to recover from a few injuries around 2019, 2020-ish, and obviously we've had the pandemic.
Yeah.
But then what's more bizarre is Alzarri has been playing CPL. Now, I guess what I'm saying is it's not like there was no data to go on. It's not like the selectors could say, well, we've never really seen him in T20 domestic cricket, so we've got no real data to go on to pick him. But that notwithstanding, Andrew, irrespective of whether they thought, he's had some all right CPL seasons. The one that's just gone was probably his best CPL season, without a shadow of a doubt. He was, and this will help me explain to you what type of bowler he is. I think the St. Lucia, what they call themselves now, Kings, I think they're called, the St. Lucia Kings.
Connected to the Punjab Kings.
Punjab, yeah. Right. So the St. Lucia Kings used him up front, and they used him as a middle overs enforcer. But then they also experimented with him at the back end. But that makes sense because Alzarri has the attributes to bowl at all stages. Mm-hmm. I don't think they necessarily wanted to use him at the back end because his high pace allows them to use him as an enforcer in the middle overs to take crucial wickets and rough up the batsman a bit. So he only really bowled at the back end every now and again, so to speak. But I didn't get the sense that they definitely wanted to use him at the back end. But every time he did bowl at the back end, he was economical for the St. Lucia Kings. So we're talking about a bowler who is multifaceted in the T20 version of the game. And I just think the West Indies selectors were too conservative. I think it didn't occur to them that if somebody can bowl high pace cutters, bouncers, hard lengths in ODIs, that might be a skill set that you can utilize in T20 cricket. I think they were too.
Yeah, and he's developed that, yeah. Obviously.
Right.
We talked about him at the beginning being very much express pace, this is what I know. But he's developed that in the ODI game in terms of to be able to bring in some variations, the off cutter, in terms of using his bouncer effectively. It's interesting. Obviously, the injuries don't help, and fast bowlers are sometimes prone to more injuries in terms of in and around that 2019 kind of period, you say. But it's still interesting to see that he's only late coming into and finding his footing in international T20 cricket.
Yeah.
There are a lot of factors in there, but some conservatism from the selectors potentially have been missed out on getting him in and around that setup earlier than he could have.
Most basically, in a nutshell, he should have gone to the 2021 T20 World Cup.
Yeah.
So the one in Dubai or UAE, right. I can't remember, yes, where it was. And the joke is, and by joke I mean tragic joke, is that the major failing in that tournament, everyone said it was the batting, but it wasn't. The major failing was we had no wicket-taking bowlers. Obed McCoy got injured on the eve of the World Cup, and we didn't really have any strike bowlers in that tournament. So much so that the person they took to that tournament was Ravi Rampal, because Ravi Rampal had been the top bowler in CPL just before 2021. So they took Ravi and said, well, Ravi's just taken 18 wickets in CPL. We can't really identify anybody else who can be a strike bowler at the T20 World Cup. And that's where I'm saying it's conservative thinking, because a selection group that's thinking outside the box and talent spotting would have said, well, Alzari might not have the numbers, but look at what he does in the white ball game in general.
Yeah.
We've had to wait for Alzari to have a good CPL for the selectors to suddenly realise, oh, maybe we should draft Alzari Joseph.
It's interesting as an analyst in terms of talking about that, in terms of there is some element of sometimes you look at the numbers and they might not exactly match up, but then you chat to coaches, you chat to selectors, and the best selectors in terms of takes in both the intuition of players and captains and coaches and the raw data that an analyst provides. And sometimes there has to be a bit of thinking out the box if you want to do well at the highest level of franchise cricket and as well as the highest level of T20 World Cup cricket.
The thing is, Andrew, you're talking as an analyst there.
Yeah, and absolutely.
But that's brilliant. That's one of the major failings we've got, though, in the Caribbean. So much so, a report's just been issued about that the 2022 T20 World Cup came out yesterday, well, at the time that we're recording this. And one of the recommendations in that report that's been published was there needs to be better talent spotting and talent identification in the Caribbean, because I don't think we do it well enough. And you're saying there maybe the raw data didn't back it up, but if you go into a tournament and you identify that this is the one area, or this is, we've got certain areas where we are weak. Now, if there's no, if you're just going on, well, who took the most wickets, that might not actually be the best bowler you need, though. Did you get what I mean? So with respect to Ravi Rampal, who I've always rated as a cricketer, Ravi Rampal's not a, how do I explain this? He's not a, I'm going to bowl terrifying pace in the power play.
He's a bit of a character. He's in terms of, he's a bit of a, oh, what's the word? In terms of a wily operator, in terms of he's a clever yeah. thinker and knows the game from his experience in T20 cricket.
Exactly. Well, you couldn't have said it better myself, right? But he's not necessarily the strike bowler you need. Now, if you've identified that you need a strike bowler, that's when I think you've got to say to whoever they're talking to, which is probably nobody, who should we take a punt on?
Yeah.
And that's what they don't do enough of. It can't just always be who got the most wickets.
No.
Because that might not be what you need in terms of, I know that sounds ridiculous. Do you get what I'm trying to say?
I do get what you're trying to say, because there's, in terms of, you just look at a score sheet doesn't tell you kind of a lot of different things in the game. And in terms of, you got to just, the base layer of statistics cannot be what you select. You have to go to a deeper level analysis in terms to understand what roles you need in a team and where you're lacking in terms of, and to understand where, what will win you games. And I think, I think I get what you mean in terms of a strike bowler of Isaiah Joseph's nature. He's fierce, aggressive. He's got the pace. He obviously has been able to develop in ODI cricket, might be more applicable in that, in those circumstances, than a wily character or someone who has the better CPL numbers or the better kind of strike rate on paper, but it might not be in that certain phase of the game. It's that just little bit higher level thinking that is really needed, and you see it in the best franchises when they think about the next tournament, not just winning one tournament, but the next tournament and the tournament after, and who we're going to develop. So it's interesting you say that in terms of just a bit more conservatism and how West Indies are coping from their great T20 generation and that movement into the next generation, which they aren't particularly coping with well.
No, not at all. And it's interesting that you said next tournament to next tournament. And actually, and this isn't, I feel like I'm digging out Ravi Rampal here. That's not the point at all.
No.
But Ravi Rampal was
a great cricketer in terms of a great operator.
100%. But his pick was always going to be a stopgap. This is for this particular tournament pick. Mm. And looking back, was there more sense in saying, let's pick Alzari now with a view to the fact we're going to Australia in 2022 for the World Cup, and he's likely to excel in Australia based on his skill set. Let's take him now and take him along. Do you see what I mean? Like it's too much short-termism in the thinking.
No,
so, to go back to kind of wrap up on the point we're now making, the fact is now, within 6 months of some making his debut, Alzari Joseph is now undroppable.
Yeah.
There is no T20 side that West Indies can pick that you will not have Alzari Joseph in. In terms of how they utilize him, that's going to be very interesting. In the T20 World Cup,
understanding how he's developed.
Yeah. In the recent World Cup, West Indies chose to let Kyle Mayers open the bowling, try and utilize swing at the front end. And that too, there was a lot of criticism about that. I got why they tried it, but they got a lot of criticism for it. And it meant that we didn't open up with Alzari. Mm. And there was a bit of, it looked like a bit of muddled thinking as to tactically, how are we using someone like an Alzari Joseph? I think the game we did win, which was Zimbabwe, the second game, Alzari was the best bowler.
Yeah.
And by a long way as well. And it was his ability to basically terrorize the Zimbabwe batters. That's the only way to describe it. He terrorized them. Mm. They could not cope with his hostile pace. So if people go back and watch the highlights of that, stumps were getting sprayed out the ground by Alzari, whether a middle stump Yorker, whether hostile bounces that the Zimbabwean batters couldn't deal with.
When you're coming up and you're trying to get into the next stage of a T20 World Cup, you don't want balls kind of flying at your head, coming at you with a real zip and into your rib cage. That is not fun to kind of feel. Yeah,
exactly. And it speaks to how much Alzari's game has developed. That I think I said at the top that my criticism when he was younger, and understandably so when he was 19, I don't think he was methodical with his bowling. Whereas now I look at Alzari and I'm like, he's putting an over together. He knows what he's trying to do. So it's not just, I'm just bowling and whatever happens, happens. It's, I'm bowling to this, like, I'm trying to set you up, is basically what I now see from Alzari Joseph. But the next stage or the next evolution of Alzari's game, particularly in T20, ODIs, I think he's got it locked down. I think he knows who he is as an ODI bowler. And he is West Indies. He's 100% pack leader in the ODI bowling. And we know what he does. In T20s, because of the shambles and the state that the West Indies T20 side is, I think 2023 going into the 2024 T20 World Cup, it's going to be very interesting to see how, because it's not just about Alzari, it's about how the unit bowls together.
And
we can talk about where we bowl Alzari, but actually, you can only decide where you bowl Alzari if you've got a pack that is also bowling to a clear plan. So You probably have to ask me this question again with Alzari, what, maybe 6 months from now, after we've seen
Absolutely.
some more T20 games and we understand the new direction that the team is trying to go in. Because as much as I can say to you, he can bowl in all phases, that West Indies might want him just in. Okay, let me ask you actually. Let me put it to you. Let me put you on the spot. If you had a bowler of Alzari Joseph's ability, 90 miles an hour plus, enforcer, can bowl at all phases, would you go? Would I'm going to put it to you and then see how you answer. Would you go two in the power play, one in the middle if you need some wickets, and one at the back end, or do you just go two up top, two at the back? Or is it not as that simple because it depends on the game? Like, how do you use someone like Alzari?
It's very game dependent, and in terms of it's obviously about how your power play gets over. And I think a captain, in terms of it, will all be down to how a captain uses him in my eyes, how they want to work with a coach and how they see he kind of slots in. From our discussion, I think probably it is useful to have that one in the middle overs, in terms of if you have a key partnership developing, you'd rather kind of put him in there, but say bowler batter's head, get some short stuff in, as well as target his stumps to see if you can break through that partnership before you get to the death overs, and potentially that partnership has built up speed and you have to bowl at a batter that was maybe on 10 off 15, but then at that stage he's off kind of 30 off 20, and in terms of looking to line up Azari a bit more confident in his role, when Azari is then having to really kind of mix in terms of take a wicket, whereas not being too kind of expensive. So I think in terms of just your run-of-the-mill game, not too much scenario dependent. You're those two up front in terms of being aggressive, knowing your lines, but on that hard length, which we've seen is really effective in T20 cricket in terms of looking at the data. But then also having those two flexible ones. And in terms of if the game scenario provides it, you could even bowl those two in the middle to be actual to take, though, if he takes three wickets in those two middle overs, and I'd be very happy to, in terms of if we have other kind of death bowlers, in terms of if that's our spin or our seam contingent. If he's taken the heart out of the game in that aspect already, I'd be very happy to him to bowl two up front and then two in the middle. But you have that flexibility in terms of he's always going to probably bowl those two up front. But then his understanding of the game, and as you say, his understanding of how to take wickets, that's going to be really crucial in that middle phase. Because it's interesting to think about fast bowlers as they grow up and develop through age group cricket. And Azhari Joseph, how tall is he? Something like 6'5", 7 foot? He's tall. So, and I'm guessing he's been tall for quite a long time. So he doesn't, in those age groups, he doesn't necessarily need a lot more than his raw pace to take wickets, in terms of in and scare low order batsmen. No, not low order batsmen, in younger batters potentially. When you then move up into international franchise cricket, in those wicket taking options in the middle and the death, you're creating a bit more smart, because pace can sometimes go the distance. If a specific batter lines you up and then puts pressure on a bowler, pace can absolutely fly. So I think it's understanding, it's interesting as we've talked about his development and he's finding his role better in T20 cricket versus ODI cricket. And I think I see that in his role for the Joburg Kings in the SA20. He's taken four wicket, economy of eight, it's not too bad, and an average at 36. So he's getting into his work. The thing I hate about the SA20 is that they don't have good highlights, so I can't see whether he's actually getting into his work and how he's being used by that franchise. But I think definitely understanding his development and how he can use those two overs, middle and death, will create Azhari Joseph's, and in terms of will create him as a really special talent for franchise cricket.
Yeah, most definitely. And like I say, 2023, I can't remember how many T20 games we've got West Indies this year, but there's always a lot. I think Cricket West Indies have ultimately said that it's now all kind of ships ahead to the 2024 Home World Cup. We can just about get over been terrible in 2021 and 2022. But if we're terrible at home in 2024, that might be the end of West Indies cricket altogether.
as you said the other day, gallows humour is the... You and Jared, when you're chatting about Jared Kimber, chatting about West Indies cricket, gallows humour is it's a funny thing.
But yeah, we'll see how he goes.
Oh, so an interesting game changer. Zari Joseph's learning his way in T20 cricket, already a mainstay in ODI cricket. It'll be interesting to see how his 2023 progresses and how he's used in franchise cricket and in the West Indies T20 team. Moving on swiftly onto our next game changer, Akhil Hossain. Now, Akhil Hossain only made his T20 debut in 2021 and he's in his 30s. Is that another late developer in terms of his development as a cricketer? I saw an interesting stat reading his Cricket Info bio that he was playing in the Champions League in that joyous T20 competition. So he's been around the circuit in terms of West Indies cricket. How do you see in this kind of late resurgence, well, not really late resurgence because he's in his 30s and we can't argue that we can't say that by any stretch that is old, but it's interesting to see how he's developed and only now franchises are kind of sitting up and noticing him.
So first things first, for the benefit of those listening, Akhil Hossain is a perfect example of the flaws of cricket development in the West Indies.
A consistent theme that we've been talking about.
Yeah. And the thing is, I think people think when I say this stuff, I'm just being pessimistic or something, but it's just, to me, it's just, these are just facts. Akhil Hossain was, 10 years ago, was in the West Indies under-19 team at the World Cup, along with players like Craig Brathwaite, Kyle Mayers. They were all in the same under-19 team. I can't remember. I think that side might have come fifth at that World Cup. I can't remember.
Okay.
And Akhil was heralded then as this guy's going to be a really good cricketer. Mm. It took Akhil Hossain 10 years to find his way into the West Indies team from there. When he went back to Trinidad after the under-19 World Cup, or maybe it might have been before, he was a recipient of, Kyron Pollard does a, he has a foundation where players can win scholarships to basically go over to England and play club league cricket as like the overseas professional.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people know this about Akhil Hossain. Akhil Hossain was one of the recipients of that because Pollard had recognised him as this guy's talented. We're talking 10 years ago. Pollard recognised this guy's talented. I'm going to get him over to England to help his development. So Akhil went over to England, did his thing. And if people are wondering who else has had that, same thing happened to Josh De Silva. Josh De Silva was recognised by Pollard, sent over to England to go and aid his development as well. So this isn't like a Mickey Mouse thing that Pollard does. If he sees a good cricketer in the Caribbean, in Trinidad, he tries to send them over to help their development. He
tries to see how internationally they can be helped in terms of sometimes going over to even playing high standard club cricket in the UK.
Exactly.
Can really develop a player. And we've seen that in many different examples of overseas players coming and playing in such leagues like the Lancashire League and various others in terms of those players being able to get really good game time in those leagues and understand their game in different settings
100%.
Than they play in Trinidad or in the other islands.
So Akhil had that 10 years ago. And then I guess if we fast forward to probably about 5 years ago now, Akhil domestically has always been taking wickets, and maybe it speaks to the developmental selection pathways in the Caribbean, but Akhil Hossain is another example of a player who should have played for the West Indies a long time before he finally got a pick. Probably should have been played for the West Indies in the test side before he got a pick in white ball cricket. And once again, a player has ended up getting picked in white ball cricket first. And now if you said to me, will Akhil Hossain ever play test cricket? No chance.
No.
Absolutely no chance, because the pathway now is set for Akhil. And that's not his fault.
No.
He can only put up the numbers. And if he doesn't get picked, that's not his fault. That's not his problem. What I would say for Akhil Hossain is, since making his debut for the West Indies, the ODI cricket first to now, he has probably been... It's between him and Alzari, but because Alzari's made his T20 debut a lot later than Akhil has, you could argue that over the last 2 years or year and a half, that Akhil Hossain has been the most consistent white ball player across both formats that West Indies have had, or have, sorry, not have had, have. Akil's economy is fantastic by not even the West, not, yeah, by West Indian standards, well, by West Indian standards, it's exemplary. By international standards, it's good. But it's not just the fact that he's an economical bowler. He takes wickets. And as much as we had a debacle in the last World Cup, Akil Hussain still did his job. Well, okay, let me clarify that. When I say did his job, as in he never goes for a lot of runs. And yes, you may say, ideally Akil Hussain should take more wickets as a spinner. Yeah. And I agree. I think if we delve properly and deep dive, there's an argument to be made that you might want him to be more of a strike bowler in terms of a spinner.
Unless he can, in terms of, have a bit more risk in his run out.
Yeah, yeah.
He only took two wickets across those three games.
Yeah, what's his economy? Was it like 6 point something or other?
Economy is about 7.8. So slightly a bit high, but yeah, it's not terrible in terms of not getting into those nines and tens.
Yes, right. So using that actually, and some will say, Bash, that's not that good. But what I mean is, we have to bear this in the context of West Indies.
Yeah.
Rather than the context of the World Game.
Who else is there who are putting up those numbers?
You're hitting the nail on the head. There is no one else they can turn to who can outperform those numbers. And by Akil Hussain's numbers, that's a poor World Cup. I'm not trying to say, that's a good World Cup. That's relatively poor for him. Because if you take the numbers he'd been producing across the calendar year, both 2022 and 2021, his World Cup was subpar in comparison to that. So I won't take the World Cup in isolation and say, that's a shocking indictment of where Akil Hussain's game is at. I know that Akil has been very, very, very consistent for the West Indies. Is he a match winner? It depends how you want to define a match winner. I think what Akil does is he helps lay the foundation, right? Now, if the rest of the bowling attack can't do anything with that foundation, that's not his fault.
we create pressure in those in those certain moments. I'm just looking at his whole T20 career. It's interesting to you say, in terms of, we said that economy isn't great in terms of the T20 World Cup. But if we look at his whole T20 career in the power play, economy of 6.37. Game changer. In the middle overs, 6.42. Unreal. In terms of looking, his average is in both about 24, and he takes 14 more wickets in the middle phase. Now that is a bowler that you can build around. That is a bowler that you can create attacking options on either side. Whether we maybe want him to be a bit more aggressive in some locations, but as you said, he's a very, very accurate bowler. And he can do a very, very important role for you. Maybe that you don't want to change that too much.
Yes.
And lose that accuracy and lose that if he's chasing wickets. You'd rather have a strike bowler bowl in partnership with him that's then going to probably rack up all the wickets. But then Akil Hussain has actually done a lot of the pressure building. It's
100%.
In terms of when we talk about pressure building in T20 cricket, it's really sometimes kind of put on the back burner because you look at the scorecards, you see, they've taken all the wickets. But it's quite hard to consistently clarify who's built pressure in what certain situations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Andrew, you've hit the nail on the head. I'm so glad you've called the numbers. And therein lies a conundrum for Akil. For me, Akil has been doing his job. The problem Akil's got and West Indies have got is, if I'm doing my job at one end and I'm like, so let's say here's a classic Akil situation. There's somebody before him goes for 15, Akil comes on, drags it back, only goes for 4. But nobody's then following that up. Do you see what I mean? So Nicholas Puran, who was the ODI captain and T20 captain, we currently have no captains. So Nicholas Puran knew, I can turn to Akil Hussain and I'm pretty much guaranteed that 9 times out of 10, Akil's going 4 overs, at worst, 1 for 30. Something like that, right? Now, yes, I'd like a bit more in the wicket column, but if you know you have a bowler who can do that, at worst, 4 overs, 1 for 30, at best, 4 overs, 2 for 22 or something like that, You need the rest of your pack to build around that. And so I sometimes feel that Akil may get talked down because the bowling unit as a whole is pretty substandard, right? But if you have that one, you put Akil Hussain in a bowling unit that actually does its job, he probably gets heralded a bit more.
Yeah.
If you see where I'm coming from, he's heralded as the glue around that everyone can kind of do their job around, because you're guaranteed what you can guarantee what he's going to do.
Yeah. No, 100%.
So, and to be fair, again, we've discussed it a bit on a lot, actually, on the Caribbean Cricket Podcast. A year ago, we said Akil's going to start getting franchise deals because he's so consistent, right? With West Indies. And this year, it's come to fruition. So where he's gone from being standout in CPL, standout for West Indies, now he's got the Big Bash. He got the Big Bash deal.
Yeah.
For, I think, Melbourne Renegades. He's currently in UAE, I think, for Abu Dhabi Knight Riders.
Yeah.
I think he just got a PSL deal.
His accuracy in terms of developing in those T20 roles and the pressure cooker that he creates, somewhere where I think he did that really well is in the T10 with the New York Strikers, which I think has kind of kickstarted a lot of these franchise interests. Obviously, the CPL did that as well. But his performance for the New York Strikers, for that newly formed franchise, he had an average of 9.30. And this is in T10, an economy of 6.2. Incredible numbers and 10 wickets across his tournament.
Yeah, and I think something I should just add with Akil, because people might listen and say, but what is it? What is it that Akil has that makes him so accurate? And I'm going to draw a parallel. And it's weird because they're not the same type of bowler at all. But I hope, hopefully people understand why I'm doing it. So Samuel Badgery, obviously a leggy when he played for West Indies. But and I, Samuel and I know each other quite well. And so I say this with the greatest respect, should this ever reach Samuel Badgery's ears? I say this with the greatest respect. Samuel Badgery wasn't like leg spinner that was...
He's not flashy.
Yeah, he wasn't bamboozling people.
Yeah.
But what Badgery did was he didn't give you free runs, right?
No.
And I've long believed in cricket that the more consistent you are, right, and the more you have to force a batter to invent a shot, the more joy you're going to get. Badgery was always brilliant for the West Indies because you could guarantee pretty much with Badgery, it's going to go there. It's going to go there. It's going to go there. Mm. And Badgery came on our podcast and basically said, the whole point of my bowling was, if you want to score, you're going to have to do something. You're not just going to be able to get four free runs. I'm going to make it so rare that I bowl a bad ball that you will feel the pressure of having to create a shot. And that's what I think Akil does so well. Because I went out to... Granted, this is ODI cricket. Went out to the Netherlands last year, West Indies toured Netherlands.
Mm-hmm.
And Akil played in all those three games, right? And I think he was the top wicket taker. Took quite a bit of tap, relatively speaking, but he was the top wicket taker. And I was watching him close up going, but what is it that Akil does? And I hope you get where I'm going with this, because I just watched him going, well, he's not spinning it per se. He's pushing it through a bit. He adds a bit of flight every now and again. And after the three matches, the takeaway I had was, he's just accurate.
incredibly accurate.
And that's, I don't know if that makes sense, Andrew, and that maybe sounds ridiculous, but that's all I could really... There might be the odd feint here and there, the subtle thing that you're not seeing, but the number one thing I took away was, he makes it really hard for you to get at him. And
maybe that's just you can't line him up. You can't line him up exactly because he bowls that hard length at times that it's difficult to be able to set yourself up to score fast and in terms of score big off him. It's interesting in terms of T20 cricket. We always hear about the variation bowlers, the kind of magicians, the Rashid Khans.
Yeah.
They always make the headlines, and as they should, because they, in terms of creating new variations and creating consistent variations that bamboozle batters is one of the flashy things about T20 cricket. But I do think there is a space in T20 cricket for grueling accuracy and grueling consistency in terms of wearing down a batter who then has to take, a measured risk on a, maybe a shot potentially they don't feel as comfortable with in terms of they could have to invent something. And I do think there is a place for T20 franchises, and it's shown with consistency of kind of badgery to other bowlers like Akhil Hussain. They haven't gone extinct. They haven't kind of fallen away from the game in terms of you always have to change it up. I think you then, if you're accepting that you're that kind of bowler, you have to be very clear on your role. Your captain has to use you in a very clear way and understand you quite well. And I think in terms of, he was captained by Owen Morgan in the T10, very, as we've kind of seen through his career, a very clinical captain who understands his bowlers very well. And I think in terms of, I might be wrong, but he's captained by Kieran Pollard clever captain. So you've got to know when you're being, where you're being used, how you're going to effectively put pressure on batters. And as we've said, be okay with your, you might not always be the headline in terms of your bowling, but if smart coaches are going to sit up and realize that, that they see in your economy and they see potentially in your dot ball percentage, you're driving those wickets rather than maybe taking them.
Yeah. I'm just going to throw two more things out there with Akhil.
Yeah.
Because we've mentioned it with the other kind of players we've spoken about.
Mm.
Interestingly enough, most of the time when Akhil's been used in the 2020 format, he pretty much bowls as soon as the power play is done, which is quite interesting to me. West Indies 10, like, you know, like sixth over's done. It's like, oh, Akhil's coming on. We know what's next. And like we hear, like in the last kind of year, 2 years, we hear a lot about matchups defining everything and so on and so forth. Don't really want to get into that just per se. But I do just wonder with Akhil, and I probably need to go and study the kind of T20 franchise leagues a bit more in terms of how he's being used. I don't necessarily know if that is the best place to use Akhil, straight out of the power play.
Okay.
He gets used there for the West Indies and has had success there. And maybe that's why they still do it. But I did notice in the World Cup, and this might be why he took a bit of tap, relatively speaking, compared to his actual career stats.
Mm.
Because we didn't bowl well in the T20 World Cup, all three games of it, Akhil was having to bowl in the power play. So Puran was having to bring him into the power play at times to almost drag the game back and try and make something happen. So I guess my point there is how, again, going into a home World Cup in a year and a half, is that still the plan? We're going to have a new captain. We're going to have a brand new white ball coach or coach in general, whatever it might be. I wonder if we're going to stick with that same plan. Because we got rigid with it. Here's a sixth over. Yeah. It's done. Time to go to Akhil. And I always say with T20.
Do you think,
go on.
You think a bit more flexibility is needed?
Because my whole thing with T20 is a team shouldn't be able to, with any sport, you shouldn't be predictable. It shouldn't be, power play's over. We know they're bringing Akhil on. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, and I just
it's predictable, and you can understand how to then. If he then becomes, it'd be interesting to see. I haven't looked at the numbers either. If as it goes on, if he's always been bowling those sixth and seventh overs, potentially teams are able to navigate him.
Right. Yeah.
In terms of they'll progress in terms of, and then they'll target bowlers that Akhil hasn't been able to then build up the pressure.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's interesting. I get what you mean about the flexibility, and it'll be interesting to see if. Where would you want him to see him bowling more?
I mean, that's the thing. Like, am I saying that effectively the middle overs are best for Akhil? Do you know why I think I'm answering that? I think because, and maybe it's just because they're flashier, maybe it's because they get a bigger name. I'm just surprised we don't try and make him bowl in the power play a bit more often. But then maybe it's because they don't necessarily see him as a wicket taker. Maybe that's why his economy is so good, because they're like, Akhil will drag the game back in the middle overs when he bowls his four in a row, because batters can't then get momentum. But then my argument is this: we aren't necessarily strong in the power play. We've only just brought Alzari Joseph in. Yes, we've got Obed Mokoi, but he's injury prone, right? And plus, he's Obed Mokoi, a power play bowler anyway. So I think Akil, this probably goes back to the point we made earlier then, Akil suffers a bit because we don't actually have a settled unit. I don't think, we don't know how to put a unit of five bowlers together to bowl 20. So it's hard. Akil, I feel, is almost, this is where you bowl because you're the one player we can guarantee can do your job. So why move? What am I trying to say to you, Andrew? I guess what I'm trying to say is, are we putting him there because we can't work out what to do with anybody else? Like, is that his best position? Because are we? Is he just there because we've seen that
it just kind of makes sense?
Yeah, rather than a good team, I guess is what I'm saying, Andrew. This is what I'm trying to say. A good team wouldn't necessarily have him there just because it's working there at this moment in time. That may not actually be the best spot for him. I saw him bowl in the power play for the Renegades.
Mm.
And take wickets up front. But he doesn't necessarily bowl up front for us. And I just don't, is it that we can't explore that because we don't have a good enough unit to be able to explore that?
You don't have someone who can cover him in the middle overs.
Yes, basically.
Potentially. So I think it's definitely, if we were the management and the select and the captain, we would be saying explore Akil Hussain at the power play. In terms of just going back to that power play economy, 6.336 is a really kind of aggressive power play economy. And I think at that average as well, in terms of he's not giving up much runs, but then if there's that feeling that we need him to break, well, as we're saying, he's taking more wickets in the middle overs, but that is because probably he bowls more in the middle overs. He still takes a lot of wickets in the power play. So I think I understand what you're trying to get at is, do West Indies cricket, do they use the kind of the time building up to the next T20 World Cup to actually explore Akil Hussain in the power play and see if he can translate the pressure that he's very good at in the middle overs into wickets in the power play. Yeah. And your wickets in the power play can be more valuable than your wickets in the middle overs.
So Darren Sammy has always said, Darren Sammy, obviously the two-time T20 World Cup winning captain, has always said that the tactics that West Indies went by in 2012 and 2016 was, if we take three wickets in the power play, we're going to win this match. And the one thing that West Indies have suffered with over the last two World Cups, we are not a power play team. At the moment, neither with the bat or the ball. And the reality is, and it may sound simplistic, but if you basically stuff up the power play, 99 times out of 100, you've lost. And so I'm just saying...
Scrape back a lot.
Yeah. And I'm just saying, if we know that one of our weaknesses, identified weaknesses, but the problem is we've got too many, but if we know that one of our...
There's so many holes in the boat. You're just trying to plaster them all.
I mean, ultimately then, I guess I'm saying, if the power play pretty much loses you the game before it started, if you don't do well in it. I mean, when we lost the game against Ireland, which knocked us out of the World Cup, Ireland reached, I think we knew the game was done after six overs. Ireland had got to like 65 for none of six. And they weren't even chasing that much. But it was like, oh, this game's done. And what I'm saying is, before we can fix anything else, we need to fix the power play. And we need to decide, just because Akil does well in the middle overs, does it matter that he can drag the game back in the middle overs if we're not even doing anything up front to begin with? Do you see what I mean? So there's just some areas to explore. But lastly, Andrew, because Akil Hussain fans will say, how did you not mention this? I should just point out that he can bat.
Left-hander, powerful low order hitter. In terms of he did do a couple of good innings for the Renegades. Do you think that, in terms of, will obviously elevate him as a franchise player going forward? Now he's got this franchise interest in his bowling. And I say that specifically because we'll combine that, looking at his batting, with a talk about his IPL in terms of his deal now going forward. So he's got an IPL deal with he went for 1 crore to the Sunrisers Hyderabad. I look at that Sunrisers Hyderabad and it has Adil Rashid as well in that squad. Do you think those two battling for that spot, probably Adil Rashid, he has his wrong'un. He is able to kind of do more in terms of variation. But do you think having that extra batter, in terms of having that batting in his locker, I would say that from just clear looking, not looking at the numbers, from clear just watching Akhil Hussain bat, he looks like a more, in terms of aggressive batter than what Adil Rashid gives with the bat. Do you think that will be in the kind of Hyderabad managers' minds?
I mean, Brian Lara is the coach, head coach this year.
Yeah, and, it's a West Indian connection.
I'm not saying that might play a role. I am saying that a Trini being the head coach may well look out for his own Trini, fellow Trini man in the team. But what I would say is just harbouring back to that Netherlands series that I went out for. I interviewed Akhil during the series actually, and prior to that series, Akhil had scored 100 for Trinidad and Tobago earlier in the year.
And was that in 50 over cricket?
That was that was in Red Bull. So that was in 4-day cricket. And I'd said to Akhil, listen, everyone's, I think it was 4-day, was it? I can't remember, I need to go back, but he scored a century for Trinidad. And I'd said to Akhil, listen, a lot of people are talking about your batting. And at that point, West Indies were starting to use him, like coming in at number 7. Like he was coming in ahead of more established, quote unquote, all-rounders when we were trying to chase games. I think there was one particular innings in Pakistan where he hit like 40 off 16 or something like that.
And so has that power.
Yes, exactly. He's got the ability to clear the boundary, but he's also got the ability for to say like you're 5 wickets down or 4 wickets down. They were bringing Akhil Hussain in and saying, right, you just nudge and nerd all the ones and let the others go at the other end. So he's got the ability to play both kinds of roles. So anyways, I said to Akhil, listen, everyone's talking about your batting. Like, are you deliberately working on it? What's the deal here? You can't score 2 first-class hundreds and you ain't got anything about yourself. And I can only repeat what Akhil said. Akhil said, I'm an all-rounder. I'm not a bowler.
Interesting.
He says everyone stereotypes me as just being a bowler, but I'm a legit all-rounder. Now, that's him saying that. Now, you could argue that every single cricketer in the world thinks they're an all-rounder. But,
some potentially without just cause.
but Akhil believes that he can. He believes he can go up and bat in order.
He can develop that skill in terms of and may create that impact with the bat. It's interesting you say that in terms of, because he's obviously into his 30s. He's a wise head on him. He's with his bowling. You see a lot of grueling impact, and you see a lot of, in terms of building pressure. And it's interesting to see if that can translate to his batting. Now, you probably don't need someone who can knock around at a strike rate. Well, you sometimes need it for a strike rate of kind of 100, 110. But if he has the ability to change the gears in terms of, he might move from that role of just out and out hitter to that kind of the sixth role where there is needed a bit more batting intelligence. And in terms of his development and late development as a cricketer, that might come into play in terms of he just knows the game a bit better, that he can create that role for himself. Do you think franchises will be noticing that in terms of, right, Akhil is actually a bowling all-rounder, but he has something about his hitting that he's got a kind of a clever mind on him, and he can potentially fill in a role for us. And so we can include an extra bowler, but he can fill in a batting role at 6 and 7.
So I'm going to be a bit cynical here, Andrew.
Do you think it's ambitious to say he's 6?
No. Do you know what? No, that's not what I'm going to say. I'm going to say that I think that Akhil has, this is purely me suggesting this, and no one has told me this. I think, because Akhil is very good friends with Kyron Pollard, and when I say good friends, as in like a lot of people within that kind of sphere of cricket, within Trinidad, look up to Pollard as like a mentor of the game. And
he's been there. He's been around the circuit, and he's understood what it's to what it takes to take the franchise route.
Right, exactly.
So Karen Pollard, in terms of, he looks up to Karen Pollard, Akhil Hussain, and a lot of West Indies cricket look up to Karen Pollard. Do you think it's fair to say that he understands the franchise landscape and what potentially it means to be to put your, in terms of, to put your West Indies cricket slightly on the back burner in terms of your white ball, in terms of your red ball cricket, and focus on developing yourself the best possible person you can be in the franchise landscape? And he can understand the criticism that you might face.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's a fair comment. But if I focus on the understanding what you need to do part more so than the putting West Indies on the back burner per se. So I do think Akhil wants to play for West Indies whenever called. But I think where Akhil, and I think this has been evident in the Pollard step down as captain in March last year, under Pollard's captaincy, and even under Pooran as well, to be fair, more and more Akhil was being used to bat up the order. Now, the cynical part of me says that that's also about Akhil developing his game to maximize his value set. Because the reality is this for me, Andrew, as good as Akhil might be and as good as economical as he might be, the reality is I don't think an IPL franchise takes Akhil Hussain if he can't bat. Because you can just get another spinner who does that, right? You could go and you could get a domestic spinner who you may never play, who can maybe do that job. The reality, I think, for a lot of these West Indian players now in this era of the game, where we don't have the goats of the game anymore. Okay, Russell and the Ryan are the last two playing really and truly in the IPL level. If you can't add another suit to your skill set, I don't think, as a bowler, sorry, I don't think top franchises will want you, is what I guess is what I'm trying to say. So
I definitely understand that.
Look at Romario Shepherd. Romario Shepherd inexplicably got a $1 million deal last year, right? But that's because he can hit a long ball and he can bowl a bit. If he couldn't hit the long ball, he's not getting that deal because his bowling's not good enough to justify a deal. But his ability to hit a long ball and be able to hit 42 or 15 gets him that deal. Akhil Hussain may well be an economical bowler, but the fact that he's now shown evidence at the international level, I can hit a long ball as well, makes him far more valuable. Do you get where I'm coming from?
Yeah, no, 100%. I think it's interesting. I'll go back to Adil Rashid and why he hasn't got a T20 deal in a long time. And that's because you look at the Indian domestic scene and you look at other people who can hit long ball and offer you something in the low order of IPL teams. And Adil Rashid, English counties, Yorkshireman will be screaming at the podcast at this moment because he potentially hasn't fit the mold of an IPL franchise's need in terms of, in the last couple of years, they look domestically and they look at what they need in terms of roles. And Adil Rashid doesn't fit that. Now, we bring that back to Akhil Hussain. And in terms of from that mentorship from Pollard and in terms of other forces around him saying that he needs to develop his batting, it'll be very interesting to see how he develops that, in what role he develops that in the IPL, whether it is pure hitter or potentially he comes down a little bit lower and in terms of he is forced to play some, not the wrong wording here, mature innings, but innings that just a little bit more than just you have to hit boundaries from ball one.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see how in franchise cricket in general, beyond his IPL, how his batting will come into his own and his in terms of him selling himself in franchise leagues.
Yeah, most definitely. So you started off by saying Akhil's 30, but in many ways, Andrew, this is actually the start now. Now this year has been the year of him getting the franchise exposure. So in many ways, this possibly is the start of his career. So actually, as much as he's had these two successful seasons, primarily with West Indies.
And in the CPL.
And CPL. Now we'll see how his game truly develops because now he's getting a proper global league experience. So it will be interesting to see where his game's at by the end of 2023.
No, 100%. And in terms of that exposure to different pitches and different leagues, and different challenges that come in within those leagues. It'll be interesting to see how he adapts. And he's adapted pretty well in terms of that early exposure. It's whether he can then, once teams have potentially seen more and more of him, and in terms of players have seen more and more of him, whether he can adapt to that next level of franchise exposure in terms of, because the great players in franchise, in terms of your Bravos, in terms of other kind of great franchise players, know how to keep things consistent enough to perform, but not consistent enough that they get lined up and worked out in franchise cricket. I think it'll be really interesting to see if Akhil can do that and make that progression with his bowling as well as his batting in that. It's so interesting to think in terms of he's getting into this kind of later stage of, you may say for a sportsman that the kind of later stage of the career, but it's really only getting going for him in franchise and international cricket.
And I guess maybe lastly then, it's weird. Obviously, depending on what your view is on cricket, international cricket for me is still the pinnacle, but international cricket's still the pinnacle. When West Indies play, I'm still fully locked in. But that can only develop his game so much because we don't play as often, right? So in many ways, he needs this now. He needs all of these leagues to come under the pump a bit more and see and change his game, actually. Yes, we know what's successful at West Indies level, but actually flying from T10 to Big Bash to UAE to what's next to PSL to IPL or whatever it is that he's doing, that's going to test him more. The reality is that's going to test him more, and he's going to be posed questions that he may previously not have had the answers for, because with West Indies, you might play in a bilateral series versus South Africa, but then we're not playing again till India come in July. So West Indies alone isn't enough to really test where your game is at, if you see what I mean.
I think that's a consistent kind of problem and conundrum that we've kind of talked about throughout this podcast is the ability to develop talent in terms of your domestic scene and give back to your international outfit, but then also allow them to develop overseas in international leagues, and where that line kind of is drawn to, and where we'll see kind of further going forward where that line kind of is placed. But it's been, I say, we'll wrap it up there, because I think this has been my longest podcast to date. It's been absolutely brilliant. Thank you very much, Mashal, for coming on. In terms of what are you doing in the next couple of weeks, couple of months?
I mean, generally speaking, as ever, people, if you're new to what we do at the Caribbean Cricket Podcast, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram,
brilliant,
at Carib Cricket. Website is www.caribbeancricketpodcast.com. Generally between those two things, you'll find everything you need to know. But our next focus is, we've got the Zimbabwe tour, which starts in about 8 days. And then the team goes straight from Zimbabwe to South Africa. And then really the big thing in 2023 that we'll be focusing on is will we get to the World Cup? That's the big focus of the whole year.
50-over World Cup. Cross fingers from everyone on the Caribbean Cricket Podcast.
So assuming we end up in the World Cup qualifiers, I would strongly suggest that World Cup qualifying competition, which will probably be us, one of South Africa or Sri Lanka, Scotland, Netherlands, Ireland are probably going to be in there. That's going to be one hell of a competition. And I think I think West Indies are going to find it very hard to get out of that 10-team competition to get to the World Cup. So anyone who didn't know that, looking for those World Cup qualifiers is going to be very, very interesting.
It's going to be an interesting listen, an interesting watch to see how this is a we don't want to say it, but make or break couple of years for West Indies 100%, cricket.
100%, yeah.
Well, thank you very much to everyone listening, and thank you very much to you, Michelle.
No problem. Thanks very much for having me on.